Welcome to Rereads. A mother and son lay on the boy's bed. They are reading, or at least they're making an attempt to read the book. The difficulty is that they keep laughing and having to put the book down to regain their composure. Here is the scene as described by that book's author. Tom heaved a great sigh as she put her foot on the threshold, but his face lit up right away, for she tossed a pansy over the fence a moment before she disappeared. The boy ran around and stopped within a foot or two of the flower, and then shaded his eyes with his hand and began to look down the street as if he discovered something of interest going on in that direction. Finally, his bare foot rested upon it, his pliant toes closed upon it, and he hopped away with the treasure and disappeared around the corner. The boy indeed is Tom Sawyer, and his heart's interest is Becky Thatcher. Mark Twain's description of young Tom hopping down the road with one foot in the air, grasping a flower, made my mother laugh until my bed shook and I wasn't sure what was more funny, my mother crying through her laughter, or this description of the gallantly foolish boy clutching a pansy in his toes. Tomfoolery. In general, the phrase tomfoolery describes one who is getting up to antics, mischievous, or engaging in unwise behavior. While the phrase did not originate with Tom Sawyer, it certainly describes his adventures, as related to us by Samuel L. Clemens, also known as Mark Twain, in his 1875 novel. The copyright stated in my Grossop and Dunlap 1946 illustrated edition, which is the same volume, by the way, my mother and I read from. In the preface of the story, Mark Twain writes, "Although my book is intended mainly for the entertainment of boys and girls, I hope it will not be shunned by men and women on that account, for part of my plan has been to try to pleasantly remind adults of what they were once themselves, and how they felt and thought and talked, and what queer enterprises they sometimes engaged in." I love Tom Sawyer, and as a boy I longed for a Tom Sawyer life. Getting up to antics, mischief, adventure. While my life never fully emulated Tom Sawyer's life, in that I never found buried treasure, nor was I ever stalked by a notorious fugitive, I still had ample opportunity to get up to antics and engage in some robust tomfoolery. It has been my experience after working with a lot of young adults that people, and often males, describe their childhood as either, "I was basically a good kid," or, "I wasn't necessarily a bad kid, but..." That is what's so intoxicating about the adventures of Tom Sawyer. He makes being bad seemingly so good. In my own case, I didn't want to be bad for its own sake, but I did consider that some rules obviously didn't apply to me. They were more of guidelines for others who needed them. The guiding wisdom of Mark Twain's preface is that he gives the reader pause. Pause to consider, why did I make the choices I did as a child, and how have those experiences shaped my way of navigating the adult world? This idea is consistent with the spirit of rereads, and the benefit of reading Tom Sawyer as an adult. In my rereading, I have also been reflecting upon my own kids and the funny antics they got up to themselves, which are too many to relate. One of the things I have noticed in this reread is the all-consuming passions of Tom Sawyer. What is before his eyes, heart, and mind is fully felt. The sublime skill of Mark Twain in catching this aspect of childhood is sheer delight to the reader, as well as a lovely reminder of what it was like to be a kid. In one of the early chapters, after Tom's heart has been smitten by Becky, our lovelorn hero lies prostrate beneath her window, hoping that she notices that he is effectively, quote, dying from unrequited love. The Shakespearean intensity of this scene is hilarious. I didn't know much of Shakespeare as a child, as Tom Sawyer was one of the first books I remember reading. However, In my rereading of this selection, I had a chuckle at Mark Twain's near Elizabethan prose. About 9:30 or 10 o'clock, he came along the deserted street to where the adored unknown lived. He paused a moment. No sound fell upon his listening ear. A candle was casting a dull glow upon the curtain of a second-story window. Was the sacred presence there? He climbed the fence and threaded the stealthy way through the plants until he stood under the window. He looked up at it long and with emotion. And then he laid him down on the ground under it, disposing himself upon his back with his hands clasped upon his breast, holding his poor wilted flower. And thus he would die. Out in the cold world, with no shelter over his homeless head, no friendly hand to wipe the death damps from his brow, no loving face to bend pityingly over him when the great agony came. And thus she would see him when she looked out upon that glad morning, and oh, would she drop one little tear upon his poor lifeless form? Would she heave one little sigh to see a bright young life so rudely blighted, so untimely cut down? The window went up. A maid servant's discordant voice profaned the holy calm, and a deluge of water drenched the prone martyr's remains. The strangling hero sprang up with a relieving snort. There was a whiz as of a missile in the air, mingled with the murmur of a curse, and a sound as of shivering glass followed, and a small vague form went over the fence and shot away in the gloom. Not long after, as Tom, all undressed for bed, was surveying his drenched garments by the light of a tallow dip, Sid woke up, but if he had any idea of making any references of illusions, he thought better of it and held his peace, for there was danger in Tom's eyes. Tom turned in without the added vexation of prayers, and Sid made a mental note of the omission. Tomfoolery. If it is in expressing his love, and at times his disdain for Becky Thatcher, if it is in his longing to become a pirate, or in his search for buried treasure, Tom was all in. In addition, in his sheer acumen for getting out of work, no one worked harder than Tom Sawyer. Tom Sawyer needed to get ready for Sunday school, an enterprise he sorely tried to avoid. The entire scene of Tom getting ready for church, trying to avoid the scripture memory lessons, and then sabotaging worship with his board-induced antics, spoke volumes to my childhood self. While it's commonly known that I have been a pastor for much of my adult life, Tom's resistance to spend a perfectly good Sunday morning in church connected with my childhood memories. I recall crying out to my mother, "Why do we have to go to church?" Her answer was quick in its reply and quick to cut off further discussion. "It's what we do as a family." How could you argue with such logic? Trying, though, nonetheless. How I wished for an older cousin like Mary, Tom's teenage cousin, who would reward me for doing my verse memorizations. "Oh, Tom, you poor thick-headed thing. Don't be discouraged, Tom. You'll manage it. And if you do, I'll give you something ever so nice. There now, that's a good boy." And he did tackle it again. And under the double pressure of curiosity and prospective gain, he did it with such a spirit that he accomplished a shining success. Mary gave him a brand new Barlow knife, worth 12.5 cents, and the convulsion of delight that swept his system shook him to the foundations. True, the knife would not cut anything, but it was a sure enough Barlow, and there was inconceivable grandeur in that. Though where the Western boys ever got the idea that such a weapon could possibly counterfeit it to its injury is an imposing mystery that will always remain so, perhaps. Tom contrived to scarify the cupboard with it and was arranging to begin on the bureau when he was called off to dress for Sunday school. Since my first and last reading of Tom Sawyer, many things have changed in my life. I got married, I became the father of 4 daughters, and one in particular begged me to have her very first pocket knife. So what is a father to do? especially a father who sat under the childhood education of Samuel L. Clemens, I got her a genuine Barlow knife. To the uninformed, the Barlow is a wooden-cased pocket knife about 3 inches long. It is thick and holds 2 blades, one long and one short. It does not sit well in modern trousers, but for my daughter and for Tom Sawyer, that mattered little. Like Tom Sawyer, whose first inclination was to scarify the cupboard, I remember going to bed one evening and moving a book around on the nightstand, only to read a sweet message carved into the furniture. "Hi, Dad." I still do not know if the greeting was used with a genuine Barlow, but I suspect it was so, and had no one to blame but myself. My overall memory of Sunday school was one of wet shoes. Our little church met in the rented space of a middle school named for the body of water behind it, Miller Creek. The choice between Sunday school lessons and the exploration of Miller Creek was difficult. Too often I showed up in the worship service, meeting after Sunday school, with muddy or soaked church shoes. There would be a stern parental lecture. Promises would be made to heed their wishes, and then I would have to spend the rest of the afternoon in my room. Then the whole exchange would happen again some weeks later because I forgot what the rule was concerning the creek. Back to our bug. In one instance, Tom captures a large pincher bug during a long-winded sermon. In the middle of the service, a dog wanders in and curls up under Tom's pew to take a nap. Tom, who has long lost interest in the sermon text and having become less impressed with the oratory, allows for a meeting between the dog and the bug. One thing leads to another as the bug grabs a hold of the dog's nose, causing the dog to yelp, which causes the bug to increase its grip, which then leads to a particularly noisy exit for the wounded animal. Describing Tom's walk home, Mark Twain writes, "Tom Sawyer went home quite cheerful, thinking to himself that there was some satisfaction about divine service when there was a bit of variety in it. He had but one marring thought. He was willing that the dog should play with his pinch bug, but he did not think it was upright in him to carry it off." Tomfoolery. Being a nuisance in church. How many times did my parents ask me not to plug my ears and make faces when I thought the soloist during the special music offering was not quite carrying the note in her selection? And how many times have I turned to my own children in church to silence or correct some wrongdoing? As my own father would often say, "Oh, the stories I could tell." Remember that tomfoolery can also mean unwise behavior. An apt description of the young before they acquire enough reference points in life to reflect upon and such things as causation. Unpleasant consequences for ill-conceived deeds has a way of growing wisdom in a person, if they heed the lesson. Yet some walk slower down the ways of wisdom. If only we could read about Tom Sawyer's life as an adult. Perhaps if he became a husband and father, or a grandfather even. Did wisdom come late to Tom? What I do know is that wisdom came late for me, if it is still yet to visit. Allow me to illustrate. I would not, most decidedly, risk crawling into a dark, confined space and face the possibility of getting stuck or lost. Tom Sawyer risked such danger as a child, not knowing how bad it could get. I took similar risks as a child, finding out, yes, it can get very frightening, very fast. In the last chapters of Tom Sawyer, our hero finds himself to be alone at last with Becky Thatcher. What should be an enchanting adventure becomes a terrifying ordeal as the children become lost, wandering the expanse of a cave with multiple tunnel systems. The children enter the cave in the first place because it holds some element of danger and mystery. It is a chance for both Tom and Becky to show the other that they are brave. "A little farther." "I'll go, if you go. I don't want to chicken out." These are not only the thoughts of Tom and Becky, but they were my own childhood thoughts as my friends and I stood before the entrance of a storm sewer pipe. D daring each other to go in. Just a little farther. The pipe was about 5 feet in diameter, the perfect height for a 9-year-old boy to walk upright. We would wander farther and farther, growing comfortable with the darkness. As long as we could look back and see the entrance, it was thrilling, scary, and fun. There were no adults around to say, maybe you kids shouldn't be doing that. For my listeners, you must remember that I was shaped by the adventures of Tom Sawyer. So when my friends and I sat around and began to ruminate on how we could explore the farthest reaches of that storm sewer, you may understand how our preparations had the ring of sound reasoning. Our plan, such that it was, seemed to be well-informed and thought out. We would get candles and find out what was at the end of that long, dark tunnel. Now, as a modern reader of Tom Sawyer, one of the takeaways of the story is that candles, while fine and dandy in 1875, were not the best options for illumination. But doggone it, if candles were good enough for Tom Sawyer, they were good enough for me. For those who have read the book, you may remember that they were not good enough for Tom and Becky in the end. We stood at the sewer entrance, so pleased with ourselves and our cleverness. In we walked, further and further. Our shadows danced upon the walls like spectral companions, comforting, but not quite. Slowly, the entrance of the tunnel grew smaller and smaller, and then just a tiny pinprick of light before it disappeared altogether. Now let me pause for a moment and reflect upon my reread experience. As a father, reading about Tom and Becky, lost in the cave for several days, this is absolutely frightening. I woke up with stress dreams about this scene, as Mark Twain describes it as follows. "Can you find the way, Tom? It's all mixed up crookedness to me." "I reckon I could find it, but then the bats. If they put both our candles out, it'll be an awful fix. Let's try some other way, so as not to go through there." "Well, but I hope we won't get lost. It would be so awful." And the girl shuddered at the thought of the dreadful possibilities. What follows is the realization of the dreadful possibilities. As for my 9-year-old self, Tom and Becky's cautionary tale spurred me on instead of giving me pause. Further, we went into the storm sewer. I should add that we had thought it wise to bring a dog with us, a large German shepherd who had strayed into our neighborhood, because we thought we were going on an adventure. After some time, we noticed that the sewer tunnel opened into a large chamber displaying several new openings of tunnels heading into different directions. As we paused in the candlelight, wondering what to do, several things took place within an instant of each other. The cross-section of tunnels offered a current of air to blow through. Standing in the middle of that chamber, the breeze suddenly blew out all of our candles. We screamed, the dog howled, and then this frightened group of little boys began to move quickly, jostling one another, with a large, hairy, unseen presence brushing across our bare legs. More screams! More howling! The acoustics in that tight concrete space was deafening. Someone yelled, "Run!" And off we went, arms extended in front of us and to the sides, trying to get our bearings by touching the walls. On we ran, the sound of the dog running behind us, continuing in its Baskerville cries. Slowly we could pick out a pinhole of light. The entrance. Some grew more brave, seeing as that our escape grew near. And so one boy, then another, would grab a hold of someone and give a frightening scream or laugh. More screams, louder echoes, the beginnings of laughter and some tears. The dog in continued pursuit. We burst out into the afternoon light, where all seemed the same as we left it. Tomfoolery. Antics. Unwise behavior. I read Tom Sawyer now with a bit of awe and disbelief. How one boy can get into so much trouble, be on the receiving end of so many unintended consequences, and yet come out heroically on top. albeit a bit scraped and bruised. It is an amazing story of unbridled tomfoolery and getting away with it. I was reminded again of why this story stayed with me throughout my childhood. Yet, I'm not just reminded of who I wanted to be once upon a time, but who I now want to become. During this season of rereads, I have been thinking about the concept of wisdom. Who are the wise, and what do they have to share with us? And this has been a thread that has run through many of the episodes of rereads. And then I pick up the book Tom Sawyer. For all of its delightful and charming ways, there is an element of the story that is an anti-wisdom tale, a negative example. The wisdom writers of the Old Testament would use this contrasting device to illuminate the ways of wisdom. The fool says or acts in this way, but the wise comport themselves in a different manner before God and others. One of the ways we learn wisdom is learning what not to do. I have found myself also rereading the book of Proverbs. In one sense, Proverbs is a guide to foolishness. Not the promotion of foolishness, rather the description of foolishness. The fool is the most frequently considered character in Proverbs, outside the character of the wise. In fact, the fool and the wise are often represented in couplets. Here's what to do, and here is what not to do. This is how the wise may act in certain situations, next to the ways the fool responds to the same situation. Here's how the wise uses her words. But the fool blathers on. It has been an interesting exercise to consider the book of Proverbs after reading Tom Sawyer. The pedagogy of Proverbs is that it presents the way of wisdom as a set of teachings to submit and sit under. Proverbs aren't meant to stuff one with independent knowledge and opinions, but to lead one in the cultivation of the God-experienced life. This is the way of wisdom, and it manifests itself in relation to others. Proverbs 13:20 says, "Whoever walks with the wise becomes wise." Wisdom is a relationship. In the 8th chapter of Proverbs, wisdom is personified, effectively saying, "Come, take my hand, walk with me." Now, this all may seem a far departure from the story of Tom Sawyer, but this is where the reread experience has led me to this point of consideration. Allow me to continue. When we come to the Gospel of John, Jesus is introduced in the first sentences as the wisdom of God, the logos, the organizing, sustaining principal force in the universe. Wisdom has become flesh and blood and walked among us, saying to others, "Come, take my hand, walk with me, follow me, let me teach you." We laugh at Tom Sawyer because of his silly antics and blustering talk. He entertains us, but perhaps should not inspire us. It has been over 50 years from my first read to my recent reread of this book, and has been a delight, told the same old volume. Do I wish I had not done the things I had done as a child? The tomfoolery, the mischief, the unwise behavior? I'm not sure if I can answer that question, at least not honestly. Does that make me unwise? I don't know. But what I do know is that I'm not wandering into any dark labyrinths with just a candle in hand. At least I learned something. This has been Rereads, and my name is Kent Place. Join us next month as we take a journey to the Salinas Valley and John Steinbeck's East of Eden. Until then, be well, and remember, you can never step into the same book twice.